Bitcoin is up 1,300% on the year. So many Bitcoin investors very happy at the end of 2017.
Sadly, we're truly in the era of major data breaches. These include the large-scale breaches at Equifax and Yahoo that we are examining today.
It can be a little bit disconcerting, though. You know, you're saying, hey, Alexa, or hey, Google, or right. whatever. And when they start responding, it's like, wait a second, are you listening to me?
Is that the good, the bad, the Alexa? We talk 2017 in technology today. It's The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick, and it's good to have you with us on this last takeaway of 2017. We look this week at the year in media, in sports, in protest, and we turn now to how technology, for better and for worse, shaped the year behind us and what we've learned going into 2018. And we're going to talk about that Alexa issue, by the way. I am not comfortable with any of that. We'll get to it with Stan Horacek. He's here with me now. He's technology editor at Popular Science. Stan, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Stan, we got to talk about Alexa. Like I said, we will get to it. What's the headline for you for tech in 2017?
2017 was an interesting year in tech. 2016 saw a lot of new gadgets, a lot of fancy new stuff. But 2017 was sort of a year of refinement in terms of technology. You know, we didn't see any huge new players really burst onto the scene. It was sort of the current players, you know, moving their pieces around the board, trying to figure out, you know, where they fit into the current, you know, world as a whole.
And the big, you know, the big gadget product that fits into this this paradigm for you? I mean, was it Alexa? Was it the home shopping bot? Is that where it's at? Amazon says they sold tens of millions of these things.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because smart homes were sort of the underlying theme of the whole year. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Amazon said that they sold tens of millions of Echo and Alexa products just during the holiday season. You know, so there are so many of these out there. You know, Google and Alexa both have $30 little dongles that you can bring into your house, and now you're sort of bought into this smart home ecosystem. So the barrier for entry is so insanely low to just put something in your house where you can say, hey, Alexa, or okay, Google, or even ask Siri on your phone to just do stuff for you. And, you know, as what companies were doing was trying to sort of build out this smart home architecture, you know, and, you know, the goal for everybody seems to be this sort of Tony Stark, Iron Man, you know, completely automated home. You know, that's the idea we all have in our heads. And that's what we're doing. We're starting to see more products, you know, even some products that don't need it, like refrigerators, even a sous vide machine this year. You know, we saw all that stuff get this Alexa integration, this Google integration, and this Siri integration. And, you know, people are trying to make everything in your home tied into the smart home systems, which is, you know, both good and bad in some ways.
Right. Stan, I mean, you mentioned how low the barrier to entry is. Has it occurred to millions of Americans why it's so low? What the incentive is here? Why Amazon and Google and these gigantic companies would want to have $30 gadgets in the home that can tie everything together, help you shop with not even the flick of a wrist, but just an inflection in your voice? And by the way, listen to your conversations even when you're not shopping for cat litter.
Sure. I mean, I think, you know, I wrote an article about Alexa earlier this year when they had a new device come out, and I said it was something, you know, oh, it's here to help you run your smart home and also sell you stuff. You know, Amazon giving you this new seamless way to buy stuff from Amazon is a really, you know, it's a smart business move for them. We're sort of lowering the barrier for entry. You know, the idea, I think the ideal would be that I think about a product, be like, boy, I really wish I had some corn chips. And then, you know, an hour later, some corn chips would show up and they debit my account. You know, I think that's the end goal there. And we're getting closer to that all the time. Now we can literally just yell, you know, hey, order me some corn chips and they'll come to your house, which is a pretty crazy thing.
But I guess the question is that we haven't really reckoned with the downside of this yet. I mean, we've all had conversations with our friends and family members who have these smart home gadgets in their homes who say that ads are starting to show up in their searches or on their computers, on their accounts, not for things that they shopped for where they said, Alexa, get me some corn chips, but just a conversation in the kitchen that may have been about corn chips. A couple of days later, you have targeted ads about corn chips that you never asked about in the first place.
Without a doubt. And, you know, one of the interesting things is that those targeted ads actually don't really typically have anything to do with your smart home devices. Those are coming from your phone, generally speaking. Smart home devices and like Alexa are interesting in that we actually were able to take one apart and go through someone. And the way they're built is fairly interesting in that they have two different processors. One is hooked up to it. There's a microphone that's always listening, but it only has like a very small amount of buffer. It can only record a very small amount of sound. So it listens very specifically for you to say a word like, oh, hey, Alexa, or hey, Google. You know, that's all it's doing. And once it hears that phrase, then it sort of kicks it over to another processor that starts listening for you to give it directions. You know, and the reason they do that is because Amazon and Google have to sort of deal with all this data, all these requests going up into the cloud, and it's a ton of bandwidth, and it costs them a lot of money. So if they can hear a request, like if you say, okay, Google, play some music, and it knows that it can just play music locally without sending that up to the cloud, it wants to, because that saves them money. Mm. So the Google Homes and the Alexas are actually safer in terms of actually recording you and your, you know, security than your phone is, because your phone is really, you know, you say something around your phone and it's probably going to hear it, and you're going to probably start hearing those targeted ads.
Yeah, and maybe my misgivings, while real, are misplaced on which gadget in my home is the most troublesome. Stan, let's talk about security. You just went there. This has been an abysmal year for tech security. Equifax had a giant breach compromising the private information of millions of people, and they're far from alone.
Yeah, it's a troubling year. You know, I was looking back through all my bylines on articles I've written about, and, you know, seeing just how depressing a lot of them are in terms of, you know, I interviewed a lot of security experts this year. And the general consensus seems to be that, on the most part, if you're a regular person, you do regular person stuff, you're going to have your personal information leaked, or it's probably already happened. At least some of your personal information is probably out there. And really, the best thing you can do is try to mitigate the negative parts of it. And I think one of the really big things that people have sort of forgotten about was this Equifax hack that happened, not only because of the scope of it, which was more than 100 million people, but also because the information that got leaked included people's social security numbers. And I think people tend to underestimate how serious it is when someone gets sort of a profile of your personal information that includes your social security number, because it's not just like they can open a bank account or something like that. So freezing your credit doesn't fix that. Like, they can do things like go to a hospital, pretend to be you, and then commit insurance or medical fraud, and you can end up in jail from it. One of the experts that I interviewed this year was a lawyer, and she said she had a client who spent time in jail while she was trying to prove that she wasn't the person who went to a hospital and committed fraud.
Well, 2017 may wind up being the year that corporate America finally confronted and reckoned with the security vulnerabilities they're putting all of us through. But Stan, I want to drop one piece of tech on you that's been highly influential this year that I don't think has gotten a ton of attention. It's the social media bot, especially Twitter bots, you know, a favorite tool for sowing social division, a weapon of Russian troll farms. Now we're hearing reports that even, you know, forget about 2016, there were tens of thousands of these bots deployed and tweeting in the closing days of that Alabama Senate race where Roy Moore lost to Doug Jones. This is a big deal.
It really is. And it happens on such a large scale, and it's the sources of it are so widespread that it's hard to really pin down exactly what happened. Because you're right, these Twitter bots happen, stuff like this happens. And as things move online, we sort of get these vulnerabilities that we didn't have before. So obviously, you know about net neutrality. Like, that was one of the biggest debates of the year, and that was open for comment for a long time. And there was internet forums that you could use to send your send the FCC or your opinion about whether or not net neutrality should stick around. And both sides of the argument are claiming that there were a ton of fraudulent comments submitted, like millions, like dead people's names being used to send in these comments.
Influencing the political debate and the social debate in a very direct way, even less subtle than a political campaign.
Absolutely. You know, in terms of Facebook, it was pretty cut and dry, and Twitter too, you know, but Facebook, you know, foreign nationals bought advertising to try and influence the election. Like, that's, you know, they bought ads. It wasn't even very a covert thing that happened. You know, that's brought that to the forefront. It wasn't that they even had to really do it in secret that much.
Well, Stan, before we let you go, look, I was going to ask you what the biggest tech fail of 2017 was, but you mentioned net neutrality, and it occurs to me that net neutrality may be the number one tech fail of 2017. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that that's true. I think we were, this year was so wrought with just things that required a lot of our bandwidth and a lot of our hand-wringing and a lot of worrying. And by the time we got to net neutrality vote here in December, you know, people were just very tired. And, you know, net neutrality, as it were, like, basically what it says is that the internet was classified as a as a utility, and that everybody was supposed to get equal access to it, and that, you know, corporations aren't supposed to be able to restrict and guide what we're able to see. And the protections went into place into 2015, and now they're gone. And we aren't gonna, one of the tricky things about it is that we're not going to see what this means for a while, because it's going to be a slow rollout, because, you know, we're back to the Wild West. You know, when the FCC was trying to repeal these laws, they said, well, the internet worked great for 20 years before 2015, you know, before these regulations came into play. And that's just not true. You know, there's certain things. If you think back to when AT&T tried to block users from using FaceTime, you know, how often do we use FaceTime? When it first came out, they said that's going to take up a lot of bandwidth. You know what? You have to pay a lot extra just to use a service, to use your own data. You know, there's some things that happened that are scary. And it's I think it's something, there's a lot of states that are still trying to block the rules from being repealed, which I think is good. And I think there's going to be a lot more about net neutrality, and people really should keep paying attention to it, even though it's, you know, maybe not the most exciting thing in the world.
And it may take another election. Stan, we may have to have you back in 2 or 4 years to talk about the latest debate in net neutrality, because unless Congress passes a new law, this debate continues. But that's the year in tech in 2017. Some bad news with security. But hey, look, good news for Amazon and Google. Tens of millions of new Alexas and Echoes in your homes all across America. Stan Horacek, technology editor for Popular Science. Thanks, Stan.
Thank you.
We've been asking you, what recent tech advances excite or even scare you?
Hi, this is Bridget in Austin, Texas. What new technology excites me is the development of autonomous vehicles, mainly because it could reduce car accidents as much as 80 to 90%. What new technology concerns me is also autonomous vehicles, mainly because of the huge loss of jobs in insurance and auto repair, but also delivery driver jobs.
Hi, my name's PJ from Montauk. Bitcoin concerns me, especially the lack of transparency for huge transactions. Crime and instability thrive in transactions like that, and it worries me.
Give us a call. We always want your voice here on The Takeaway. 877-8-MY-TAKE.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.